everybody, and welcome back to your favorite G.I. Joe podcast show, doing a seasonal show just in time for a holiday that, let's face it, is very unpopular. This is Knowing is Half the Podcast, and I am Ray Stakanis.
I am Robert Clark Chan.
I'm Gina Ippolito. I thought for sure Chan was going to derail us.
Yeah, you know what? There's a little buzz hangover, apparently.
Well, here's the thing. I had something that I wanted to say regarding like the whole Father's Day-ness of it all. And then I was like, but it isn't like really a joke. It's like some like exposition, I guess. I'd better wait until we do the thing properly so I can get into it. This is serious. This is a serious podcast, and we take these things very, very seriously.
We absolutely do. Thank you for calling it correct, Robert Clark Chan. Now, I just want to open up here by saying that ordinarily I'm one to give you grief. I've given you grief about a lot of artistic choices you've made. Indeed. About certain television programs you've decided to bring to us on the show.
Some of it is warranted.
Certain episodes that you've chosen to show us over other episodes that maybe would have been better. Indeed. And I've definitely given you grief about some of the art projects that you've put together in your own unique vision. That's fair. Mm-hmm. Today, I am going to say, given that the Little Mermaid live action movie is currently like very big in theaters, given that there's a Father's Day holiday on the horizon coming up over the weekend.
Depending how long this takes. I mean, it could show up right on time. Who knows?
This thing could show up around Christmas the way it's been going lately. But the thing I wanted to say is you did an excellent job picking out an episode for this week. Mm. And I think that you deserve to hear it.
Darn tootin'. And of course, this isn't when it was supposed to happen. It got shuffled around. I think I actually scheduled it for later because I was just like, oh yeah, I'm gonna get ahead of this. I'm gonna hit all of the holidays.
Yeah, Jen, you scheduled it for the week after Father's Day, and I moved it around so it would actually be coming out before the holiday.
I really tried to fuck it up. Honestly, did.
Even at your best, you're still somehow the worst.
There are a few Father's Day cartoons. There are far fewer than there are Mother's Day cartoons. Surprising. And there are not a lot of Mother's Day cartoons.
Yeah. Like
the one we went to was pretty weak sauce. This one, at least they mention Father's Day in there.
It's a general talking point of the plot. It's forgotten quickly, but it's there.
Yeah. Which is weird because I feel like there's a lot of parents in cartoons. And like, sure, you don't want to like focus every episode on the parents because, you know, like not everybody's got two parents or even one parent.
That's your reason you don't want to focus on parents the whole time?
I mean, I don't write cartoons, but I know.
They're usually kids shows. Kids want to see themselves. They don't care about looking at fucking parents.
All sorts of cartoons have like holiday specials. I'm just thinking of like, you know, like, yeah, you got... You're breaking stories and like, fuck, man, we got like 140 of these to go through. A Christmas one, a Thanksgiving one, a Father's Day one.
I don't understand why you wouldn't just pick out every holiday and just be like, there, we're doing those.
We need more Arbor Day cartoons.
Now you're talking my language. I just need to be in charge of a show so that I can give every holiday its proper due.
Yeah, when are we going to finally have a cartoon that celebrates the gathering of the Juggalos? That's what I want to know.
Right. We've got a friend of the show who's actually performing at the gathering of the Juggalos this year.
Is that right?
Yeah. Or has Grady done this show?
Grady, I believe, has done this show. Yeah. I did not. Is Hellcross playing the gathering of the Juggalos?
No. He's touring with the Necrogoblicon now.
Excuse me. I did know that. Yes. Mm-hmm. Grady James Welch, multiple judge from the Who Would Win show. I do believe he's been on this show at least one time. Find it in the archives.
Look it up because we're not going to do it.
I'm not going to help you with that, but I will tell you it's in there somewhere, or maybe it's not and I'm remembering it wrong. What a delightful goose chase I've just sent you on. Oh my goodness. I guess technically you could just search our podcast feed of near 300 episodes for the word Grady. It would probably come up. Yeah, not guaranteed though.
Seems like a lot of work.
Anyway, I did not know there was a Little Mermaid cartoon from Disney back in 1992. Did not know that. This is news to me, and I have Disney Plus, and I'm on there a lot, cruising children's section. Not what you think. Stop uh-huh. right there.
Uh-huh.
Did not know there was a Little Mermaid cartoon.
Indeed. I've actually pitched this several times for who would win, because there's like a bunch of episodes. So there's like a lot of things to pull from. And honestly, I have no idea. I don't think Ariel's probably a really strong combatant.
Don't think she is.
There's a lot King of material.
Triton,
though.
King Triton might get there.
I guess. Like, he didn't really show off much.
He's like, not great.
Like, you're trying to, this Triton does all sorts of cool shit if you're the king. And if I were showing, yeah. which I'm not.
Yeah, it's a lot of implied. People are just like, he's so powerful, and then he never shows us why.
Hmm.
Well, it's like, just like in the movie, no one ever really goes to him until it's sort of too late. I mean, I guess you could say that the poorly named urchin tries to get him, but gives up very easily.
That's rude. That's like how Scar is named Scar, and you're like, man, that's a stupid name for a parent to give a lion. And then you find out that in fact he has Scar is just like a nickname, and he has another name, and you're like, oh, well, good. The parents couldn't possibly. Oh, his parents named him Trash. Of course he grew up to be a fucking asshole. Wait, is Anakin Urshan? Jesus.
I mean, it's the thing that sucks about this is that, so he's a merman, and
he is. Yeah, he's a merman.
And everything else in The Little Mermaid is like given a name that sort of fits what it is. Flounder is a flounder.
Yeah.
Sebastian, obviously.
His full name is Sebastian the Crab. But the bad guy in this is like Manta Ray or whatever.
Bad Manta or something? That's a terrible ass name.
Yeah. And then so the orphan is named Urchin. He is not, in fact, a sea creature named Urchin. And you just know some writer was like, oh, but he's like the other kind of urchin, the kind that's on the streets of London picking pockets because he doesn't have any parents.
He should have like a Newsies cap on.
Yeah. I found it very clever because the word urchin has two different meanings. You guys,
you know what? Like, I get that and I understand it and I'm like kind of okay with it. The evil manta is just some shit evil, writing there. I'm
evil
sorry.
Manta is my. I loved him.
I don't like to call people out like that. Well, of course you would, because it's Tim goddamn Curry.
And oh, even was that Tim Curry?
Even when he's phoning it in, and he's phoning
was
it in.
Tim oh, he is Curry? Very much. It sounded good. Like a Tim Curry knockoff.
I mean,
because he was phoning it in, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, for shit. Samuel Lee Wright, who plays Sebastian, the original Sebastian, he sounds like he's phoning again.
No. On Wikipedia, it says Sebastian. Not Sebastian. I'm thinking of the flounder is not the original flounder.
How come his name isn't Flounder the Flounder? If it's Sebastian the Crab.
That's two different names.
Right. It's Sebastian and then like something that describes what he is.
But it's not everyone name. Is the something. You either get the name for like what you are, like Bad Manta, because he's a bad manta ray, or you get the name like Sebastian, but his last name is the Crab, like Sebastian of Vinci. Sebastian da Vinci would be Sebastian of Vinci.
Uh-huh.
Huh.
Also, I'm sad Scuttle isn't in this, and I'm even more pissed off that they make the eel sort of sound like Scuttle. Like, they're like, what if this eel selling wares is an old Jewish man?
I will give you three guesses as to who voiced Maury the Eel.
Is it the same actor that played Scuttle?
I don't know who played Scuttle.
Look, I know the voice, and it's going to kill me when you say it. I did not look this up. And as soon as he started talking, I'm like, okay, you were a very famous old timey, actor / comedian / voice actor. And I cannot place your name at all. And I'm going to be very mad when you tell me his name is
Maurice LaMarche.
No.
Buddy Hackett.
No.
It's
a Buddy Hackett type. Yeah.
No. Buddy Hackett.
That's who played Buddy Hackett played him in the original Little Mermaid. Maurice LaMarche played him, I'm guessing, after Buddy Hackett died in the Little Mermaid Ariel's.
Spoiler alert.
Huh. Okay. Well, in fact, in the TV series, Maury the Eel is played by Dave Coulier.
Oh, no good for way. Him.
I was wrong on all accounts.
Noted oral sex receiver in a theater.
Good Dave for him. Coulier.
That's a Michigan guy right there, everybody. That's a Detroit comedian. Thank you, Dave Coulier. We claim him proudly.
Wow. You say
we don't have a lot, Chen. We don't have a lot, Chen. We got him and Tim Allen. So, like, Dave Oof. Coulier wins Oof. By default. You
not
know what
great.
I'm saying?
Great.
Yeah, it's not yeah. great. It's All not right. great. You know? But Little Mermaid, this is an episode. This is a Father's Day episode of Little Mermaid called Trident True. Like, Trident True, but Trident True.
I don't hate that.
Clever. Yeah, I think it's clever. I was into it.
Yeah. There's enough clever in this episode that I only got a little bored.
yeah, like in general, I will say that like usually around this time, a kid's cartoon would just be across the board terrible. And this isn't good, but it's not terrible at any point. It's just lazy, very lazy at points.
You could argue, though, Disney cartoons of the 90s were like a little bit higher bar, a little higher quality than most everything else that was being put out there.
I guarantee you we can find ones that weren't. I also thought this wasn't great, but wasn't bad. It was sort of a nothing burger to me.
Yeah.
You are really into this word nothing burger.
She's saying it a lot. Must be a writer's strike thing.
Yeah, it must be. Or,
the first time
or
I said it tonight.
She's going down the Trump hole.
Oh, that could be very well,
first time
too.
I said it tonight.
Okay, yeah, that's tonight. One. We'll count it. I'll find a little ding sound and just drop in every time you say it.
No, you won't. Stop it.
Yeah, you guys can't even edit out bullshit. Oh.
I have one of those.
Well, that's something. I've got a hot take here because the original Little Mermaid movie came out in 1989, and my five-year-old, she just discovered it recently, like in the last year. And I'd never sat down and actually watched the whole thing before until after we went to Disneyland and she went on the Little Mermaid ride and loved it. We went on multiple times, came home and she's like, I want to watch Little Mermaid movie. And I said, I've never seen it. Let's watch it. Animation in the Little Mermaid movie, not great. It's a little cheapy.
Crazy.
And my hot take is I think the animation in this 1992 cartoon is actually better than the 1989 thinly animated Disney film.
Did you watch the original? What did you watch it on? Disney Plus or some bullshit like that? Instead of owning
the VHS? Of course
I
watched it on
the
streaming service.
Like I did.
VHS.
I guarantee you I've seen it more than you do. And my first thought for this cartoon was, oh, they did not try as hard on the animation as they did
Gina,
in the movie.
Are you actually trying to big time me by saying, hey, Ray, that movie you said you just saw for the first time, I've seen it more times than you.
Well, first of all, I have many issues.
Yes, Gina,
with the
I guarantee you, have.
I have many issues with the fact that you had not seen it. It was such a huge, huge movie for so many years. And that's smacks of both sexism and, oh, no, I don't want anyone to think I'm gayism to me.
I would argue that there are a lot of films in the Disney Renaissance that would fall into a period of many people's lives of our generation and, you know, a little older, younger, where it's like you're just past that age where you could watch it.
That was it.
And then you get into like adulthood and you're kind of like, you know, I got shit to do and it's not on the top of my, you know, to-do list. So
Gina, I can tell you exactly what happened. And I was a huge Disney fan. I like, you know, the Robin Hood, Sword in the Stone, Great Mouse Detective. There's a deep cut.
No,
and I loved all the Disney films, but Gina, hold on a sec. Hold on a sec. But then, and I loved the Disney films. I was very much into it. 1988 came around. The year before Little Mermaid dropped and a movie called Akira fell into my lap and changed the way I viewed what animation could be and should be. And at that point, movies like The Little Mermaid were no longer of interest to me when the world of anime had just opened up. That was the animation I was tuned into. So I've never seen Hunchback of Notre Dame. I've never sat down and watched The Lion King. Any of these movies from this certain era of the 1980, basically after Akira, up until like general adulthood, I didn't see any of them. Go ahead.
Nah.
My point was so strong, Gina has backed down.
I can't see how that's possible. I feel like there's another reason for it, but it is what it is.
Yeah, it's just you're spouting a bunch of bullshit trying to make yourself sound smart.
You know what? The truth will set me free, and it does in this case.
I try not to agree with Ray, just on general principle, because
you're usually
works
right
out well.
Usually right.
But I hear him on this one. That makes
Thank
a lot
you.
Of sense.
Well, there was a period of time that was Beauty and the Beast, The Little Mermaid, Aladdin, which most people consider the best of the Disney movies.
A lot of people say that.
With the best songs. And that's because the songs were written by Alan Menken and Howard Ashman. Howard Ashman, unfortunately, passed away like right before Beauty and the Beast got nominated for a huge like Academy Award, and he didn't get
like
to
16 feet tall.
yeah. But those, I believe Lion King was maybe also in there as well, but Little Mermaid, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin, widely considered to have the best songs. And after he passed away, Alan Menken has done stuff since then, but Ashman was widely considered to be sort of the genius behind it all.
Wow.
And
take that, Menken.
And I think that them together has never been.
Now that might very well be true. Andrew Lloyd, ever since Weber died, it's just not been the same.
That's how that works. That is 100%. You
know, to be fair though, Alan Menken, and the one that really gets me is from the, of course, great movie, Wreck-It Ralph 2, Ralph Wrecks the Internet. And he wrote Alan Menken wrote the Slaughter Race song as sung by Vanellope von Schweetz. And I remember as I'm watching that movie going like, this song is hilarious and brilliant and wonderful to see the closing credits. Oh, it was written by Alan Menken. That explains a heck of a lot. I find him to be still phenomenally talented.
He does not do lyrics. He only composes the music. So Ashman is usually the one that's like that gets the credit. He also did the songs for Little Shop of Horrors, which are great.
Excellent. Yeah.
He was a genius, but he was diagnosed with AIDS and during the production of The Little Mermaid, he found out he had AIDS, and then he was undergoing treatment while he was working on Beauty and the Beast, and then unfortunately died. I think he was only like 40 years old. They had a whole NPR thing about him. It was very, very sad because Beauty and the Beast was the first like animated movie that people sort of paid attention to in terms of, oh, this isn't just good for an animated movie. It was great. So yeah, it got nominated for an Academy Award, but he died like right before it did. So he unfortunately didn't get to see, but yeah, they credit the Disney Renaissance to him. And a lot of people think if he had still been alive, then the next sort of round of Disney movies would have done even better. But those are the three that like people have the most fondness for, especially people of a certain age, mostly because of Howard Ashman.
And those people tend to be about 5 years younger than me. For example, TV's Gina Ippolito.
Here's the thing. You are correct, but also I watched all of them because I was comfortable with my masculinity.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. The fact that Ray had no curiosity about these movies is very telling.
I mean, I was a full-on theater dork, so that's, you know, that's not a good defense for me.
I was a full-on theater dork as well. I just, this was a blind spot that maybe I should have seen, but it just never struck me as, you know, I'm multifaceted. My nerd side is as high as my theater nerd side. And so sometimes those two worlds bash together. In this case, there's a lot of...
You never read a Wizard magazine in the 90s. I ain't buying it.
Listen,
I ain't buying
that, you know what? The theater nerd side of me kept that down. Thank you, Robert Clark Chan. I know, but I never saw Jurassic Park until a few years ago. I've still never sat down and watched Titanic, Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, Aladdin. I've still never seen these movies. Like, this is a huge gaping hole in my reference level, but they're around. They're around so much. I've gone on the rides. I feel like I've seen them, even though I haven't. Does that make sense? Does that?
Nope.
Somebody in the audience is tracking real hard with what I'm saying right now. And you know what? I appreciate you. Just a little slide. Hashtag Ray, I get it. Just that's all you got to do, and I'll know we're on the same page. You don't got to say more. It's fine. It's a little embarrassing to admit that the greatest late 80s, early mid 90s cinematics that happened, you just skipped in favor of Army of Darkness. That's just what I did.
Keep an eye on your Twitter 4 years from now when people are going through the backlog, eventually catch up. Like, yes, I need to hashtag this to Ray on the thing which is now what used to be Twitter. And hopefully he'll remember what I'm talking about. And
no, here's the deal, though. The problem is the people that would be tracking with it are probably going to skip the Little Mermaid episode.
Probably.
Regrettably. Yeah. And I wish they hadn't.
They'll come back in 15 years once they've had a kid.
Oh, and, okay, yeah.
You're right. Like, oh, my God. Yeah, I just finally watched this. I should listen to what these guys had to say about it back in 2023.
This is the gift that keeps on giving.
Anyway,
let's get the thing going. I just called him Blue Cape because they didn't say who he was, but his name, legitimately, as y'all said, Evil Manta.
The Evil Manta, yes.
The Evil Manta.
He has another name like Al the Evil Manta.
I just love it. There's a sales fish that comes around. He's trying. I don't know what the sales eel. You call him a sales fish, but he's an eel. So that already messed me up.
Cave to cave. Eel fish or cave to cave sales fish. I'm sorry.
That's it. Which,
I don't know.
That's a bit you should like, Chan. That's in your wheelhouse.
It's kind of there. And that's why, like when he first said it, I was like, I don't know if I'm going to like this or not, because if you keep it up, you know, if you keep maintain a high level, I'm into it. But if it just ends up being like the Flintstones, you know, we're just dragging every single thing. Like, but boy, what if we were underwater?
There was a lot of that in this episode, to be fair.
There was. And so I think, even though this line here,
personally, I hate cave to cave sales fish,
is okay. I feel like they kind of overdid it. And in retrospect, not that great.
I don't know. You're a vulnerable sales fish. You're carrying around a like basket of all the wares you own to sell. Mm-hmm. I just don't think you go for the evil overlord into his castle. And
it's probably
just
the
try
only one
sell-
that has any money.
Yeah, but even when he finally sells him something, it's like, how about I pay you with your life? And it's like, you know, that's not a good deal. You shouldn't have gone. Shouldn't have gone, dude.
He's not a good sales fish. I think
he's
we can
very
all
much
agree.
Not. He's a better thief, honestly, than he is a sales fish.
Middling
wrong
thief.
Line of work.
Mm.
That's fair. We open up with after this wonderful scene. Okay, so yeah, Salesfish shows up and gets kicked out. We find out that Evil Manta has a dogfish that's very like rabid.
I love him. He's adorable.
Oh gosh. You know what? I'm mad at myself for wondering to myself if Gina would like that dogfish.
Yeah, that's pretty dumb, Ray.
I mean, it's an animal. Gotta love it. Skeet shooting. We open with Skeet shooting with his trident. So apparently that's a thing the trident can do. The Skeet shooting, that would be King Triton and this new boy named Urchin.
God, this is what I will say about this urchin boy. The premise of the episode is basically that he's an urchin. His name is Urchin and he is a street urchin because he has no parents. And he sort of hangs around King Triton because he desperately needs a father figure. Now, King Triton has just a ton of daughters. It's established in the movies. Their names all start with A. And so this could have been just a girl, one of his daughters. And instead, the logic behind this is like, well, dads and sons have a special kind of relationship. Dads and daughters have a totally different kind of relationship. So, like, let's, like, make a brand new character that we've never seen before instead of just making it Ariel or one of her sisters trying to get him. Because, like, girls don't go on as many adventures. And I hate it.
That's a bold take because this is literally a show about girls going on adventures.
I mean, it's a show about Ariel and her sort of misadventures. Yes, which makes it even dumber. But like this character is so clearly designed to be like, yeah, like King Triton doesn't have any sons and this kid doesn't have any parents. And like, you know, every boy needs a dad and like. Dads and sons, like he'll want to make him proud. Like it just hits differently, and it's just stupid.
It looks like he did. He was in five episodes out of, what is this, like 30 something or something along those lines. So like it's not like a one off character. He doesn't show up very often.
he only shows up to suck.
Honestly, I can't stand him.
Hated him.
I assume that almost all these other episodes are Ariel fronted. So, you know, if there's like one episode that like features like a boy character, that's fine. If he took like a main role or showed up more than fucking five times, I'd be like, I'm out.
Absolutely hated this character. I hate him.
It's like, damn, dude, this guy, it would have been cool. And I'm sure maybe the rest of the series does this, but like the sisters in The Little Mermaid are just like less hot, worse singing versions of Ariel. And like, I mean, they don't really get a backstory. They're just sort of like, they're the ones that sort of follow the rules and are interested in hot mermen. And then there's Ariel who's like, so like, give this storyline to a daughter, like have like one of the daughters be like, I never stand out from the bunch. I always try and get him an interesting gift every year, but every year it's just another, you know, the underwater version of a tie, which is a joke that they make a lot, kind of. But like, there's no reason to add a new character in there just because he's a boy, and it really pisses me off.
It's interesting. I don't think this passes the Bechdel test, despite having many, many female characters who indeed even talk to each other. But they're all talking about what they're going to get daddy for Father's Day.
I mean, that's understandable based on the fact that it's a Father's Day episode. So I have an issue with the fact that none of them, like, that Ariel doesn't do her shopping more than one day in advance. Like, give me a break.
You just have type A issues with it.
No, I mean, here's the thing. Again, like, it's established in the movies that she like collects all these wonders and she loves her dad, but like, so you would think she would be excited to be like, oh my god, I want to get him something really cool, maybe something that he's never seen before, maybe something from like the human world that he's never seen before. I don't know.
Apparently this is a prequel, so it's possible she's like not got into that yet.
It takes place between two things, though. It takes place between like the Ariel prequel movie and the Little Mermaid.
There's more
prequel? There was an Ariel prequel movie.
Yeah, and then there's one like where she has like spooted out a little baby and the baby like wants to swim in the water. So it's she has a baby. You guys don't know Little Mermaid 2, Back to the Sea?
Definitely do not.
I thought you meant a prequel. I was like, she's already like porking some dude?
No, after she marries Prince Eric, they have a baby, and this baby is like has human legs, and she's like, I just want to be in the sea. And it's like the reverse. It's like, oh, whatever you do, your kids will want to do the opposite.
Oh yeah.
Well, look, I just want to say real quick, why I hated Urchin before we move clearly on, is listen, Urchin is an orphan, an unloved, unwashed orphan, even though he's in the ocean somehow. And the king of all the sea has taken time out of his day to do an activity with this kid, in this case, skeet shooting. And then the king, the ruler of everything, turns to this orphan he owes literally nothing to, who he just took time out for, and says, okay, I got king shit to do. And the orphan gets passive aggressive, like, oh, he never has time for me. He doesn't owe you anything, Urchin. Also, what are you talking about?
90 of his own kids that deserve their own storylines.
Yeah. This Urchin, and that's why it's just like, dude, he's already done more for you than he ever needed to, period. And it's still not good enough. Go F yourself, Urchin.
I'll say this as someone who now has a young lad of, maybe not exactly that age, but right around there. Like, the amount of attention they can suck in is literally bottomless. You could go
that is true.
The the depths of the Marianas Trench and you would still find room for the child to suck up your attention. So is it good? Absolutely not. Irritating? 100%. Is it real? It kind of is.
It is.
Like, that's it.
But there's a difference. This is actually your kid. You know what I'm saying? Like,
wow. Wow.
I got all the time in the world for my kids. just saying. Okay. Do we have anything else to say about any of this before we move on with the plot?
Remember.
Just that he sucks.
He sucks. Yeah. And he, not only does he suck, he decided to like act out, as it were. So he's going to get some of his seafaring creature friends together, who he could just be playing with, honestly. And instead, he goes and he pranks some of Triton's daughters, you know, the ones and the rest, as the old Gilligan's Island theme song would have called them, and pranking their makeup. And that would be what, like a lipstick is actually like a, I don't even know, a
yeah, like a shrimp, like a sea shrimp or yeah, something.
Thank you. I think you got that, Gina. There's a sponge powder with like a sponge fish, and the comb is like a fish with like a pointy, you know, thing on its back. And then the girls come over and they try to use their makeup to get all ready. And they're talking all about what they're going to get dad for Father's Day. And it turns out all of them kind of suck a little bit too. And then they all get pranked is just like, essentially they'll be like going to use the lipstick and then the shrimp pops out and shits all over their face. Like, those are the pranks level we're talking about right here.
Yeah.
Also, all these sea creatures are in on it. Like they're this, all in this on it. Shitty yeah. kid is like, haha. I have a theory that his parents left him, but that's a whole other thing.
Because
he's shitty. But yeah, he does this bit and he's like, okay, shrimp, you gotta like the shrimp basically like, yeah, like poops red all over her face. And then the comb fish messes her hair up. So they're in on it. This shitty little kid got them in on it, but also no harm done. I would have laughed if I was watching it.
Yeah,
I was honestly surprised because normally in this situation, in this kind of cartoon, the girls would lose it. And in fact, what they say is just,
that boy needs a good talking to.
Yes, by somebody he respects.
Well, it definitely leaves us out.
That was so weird. That was.
Well, oh. That definitely leaves us out.
Yeah, that was funny. To be fair, that line was funny. Yeah.
I mean,
the other lines were ridiculous. That is not a way I think anyone would say in this situation.
It felt pretty misogynist, honestly. I don't.
I get this. He's like a, you know, like a 10-year-old boy who doesn't have respect for 17-year-old women.
Yeah.
All right. All right. Yeah. You're supporting this. You're co-signing your behavior.
It is like, especially back then, you know, like it is, they do, they even say at the end, like he already is kind of like our crappy little brother. Like, this is, I think, just what boys do to especially older girls. Cause they're like, ha ha ha. Like they're always doing, it's like a John Hughes version, which yes, condones rape. So there you go.
You know, he really is like, he's like the Huck Finn of the merman.
Yeah,
you know, and I mean that as derogatorily as possible.
Sure.
Now they go to the market. Ariel's at the market looking for a Father's Day gift, and this is where we get some of the Flintstones shit. Okay, the makeup pranks were also Flintstone shit, but here we get a guy selling a fish that's also a beard trimmer that goes nuts and like shaves all of his body and facial hair off.
It's a pretty good beard trimmer though. Like if I had a fish that ate all body hair, that'd be cool.
Okay.
Yeah, that would be okay. So what you're saying is you're okay with like a crab, like kind of like an aquatic insect just crawling all over
no.
you and slowly devouring your hair.
No.
Okay, Gina, I've already pressed send on the order from Amazon to your house. I mean, I can't take it back now.
creepy water bug coming your way.
Creepy water bug that eats all hair. Yes, it was very easy to find. Shockingly, very inexpensive.
No. Man, Amazon just has everything, doesn't it?
They just have everything, man. They'll get it to you in 24 hours, because if they don't, it'll die. That's the new motto of Amazon. Then we have a squid pen, and we get the requisite. I think they do this gag like three times in the cartoon of the thing not writing and then... shooting out ink everywhere.
Mm-hmm, yeah. mm-hmm.
Just what? It's not that funny. It's not a good bit.
It is what it is.
Eh. Then we meet back up with the sailsfish, the eels here, saying like, ah, you don't want one of those. You want one of these. I loved it. It was a good bit. Can we hear the voice? Honestly, I thought he did an excellent job. I liked his job with this character.
How'd you like to be the only kid on your sandbar with this one-of-a-kind shell?
Oh, thanks. But Daddy already has 100 of those in his collection.
You know, it's kind of like it's Dave Coulier doing Joe Pesci. That's what it is.
No, it's Dave Coulier doing Buddy Hackett. We have already established this.
Oh, is Joe Pesci just doing Buddy Hackett?
Yeah, I could see that.
Yeah, I guess I could see that.
Oh, wow. We've uncovered one of the riddles of the Sphinx.
Yes. Yes, we have.
It's man.
Just let him.
Wow, I'm so smart. Anyway, the eels offers them these glow-in-the-dark glowy shells, and they're just like, yes, these glowy shells sound great. He goes, well, I don't have any, but I got a map to where you could find them. Good bit. I liked it.
Mm-hmm.
They got to go to Shark Canyon, and they're just like, that sounds very dangerous. Sharks try to eat us. And he says, no. There's no sharks in Shark Canyon.
It turns out there weren't any sharks in Shark Canyon.
This guy is out on the level somehow.
Yeah.
Accidentally, probably.
Yeah, because Shark Canyon is just a hole in the ground that's shaped like a shark that you go down into.
Yeah, all right.
Shark Canyon.
Yeah, it's a weird kind of misdirect that is like speaks of good writing, except that it's just like real. It just seems kind of like an anomaly here.
Yeah. Yes, it does. So we waste no time at all. We're going A to B to C in this episode. We're going straight to Shark Canyon. They find the glow shells. They're down way at the bottom. And as they're going to try to find and pull them out, and honestly, they don't seem that hard to pull out. Like, I don't know why there aren't more of these things. I mean, people could sell these for lots of clams. Is that the currency? That is an aerial monopoly. It's clams, shellfish,
we
shells.
We know why they're there. Because of the octopus that shows up. That's sort of the whole thing. It's like, yeah, there's no sharks, but nobody goes there because they get eaten by a giant octopus.
Yeah, he's mean too. Like, we meet other octopi in the octopiddle in this episode, and they are not mean. In fact, they are tools of the establishment.
Oh, yeah.
I don't like that the octopus is the villain here. I think we need to educate humanity about how gentle and smart these creatures are.
They're smart. I wouldn't say gentle.
Yeah, they are. Haven't you ever seen the one where it's like caressing the lady's finger? And
oh God, I'm gonna barf.
All right, send her an octopus to gently caress her in the night.
I would like that. I like the octopus, the gentle octopus. I would like to be friends with one.
I am skeeved as hell right now.
I you need to watch my octopus friend Ray. No, you monster.
I'm 0% sure. I would rather watch all these Disney films I've missed back in the early 90s than watch your octopus friend today. I'll just put it there. Terrifying. They are absolutely we had some friends over, my wife's friends, and they said, we're gonna do Korean barbecue in your backyard.
Oh boy.
And so they brought over a new, they've just bought it. It's Korean barbecue style grill and a whole bunch of like, meats. And they put the meats on the grill and then they heat them up. And so they brought like 5 or 6 courses of meats and we were full after 3. But the fourth course they brought out, they were like, well, I don't know who's going to eat them, but I got some tiny octopus.
No.
And I go, fuck no. I'm not eating that.
Were they alive?
I don't think were alive. Please. I didn't look hard enough to find out.
Fair enough.
Here's what's crazy. I didn't eat one. My wife didn't eat one. Mm-hmm. My 5-year-old ate one.
And why is that
crazy?
She
was more brave. She was into it. She was into it.
Yeah, they're fucking delicious. Every Italian person eats them when they're little. Don't be such a white person.
I mean, too late. Guys, I don't know what to tell you.
We used to eat them all the time. And then once I realized how smart they were, I could no longer do it. But they're still super fucking delicious.
It sounds like Italians are horrible human beings.
Yeah, wow.
Who enjoy the suffering of others.
Man, it's a good thing dolphins aren't near Sicily or they'd be extinct.
Right? Like a cove all over again, but Mediterranean.
Yeah.
Mediterranean so cove.
So unfortunate. No, tentacles are terrifying. Octopus are horrifying. Everything about that is upsetting. I will not be eating the octopus.
Don't trust an octopus.
I definitely do not. Anyway, the point to get back to here is there's a big old mean octopus, which is just wild. Again, because we see a friendly octopus later working as a masseuse.
I mean, here's the thing. Like, octopuses are not a monolith. Some are good. Some, you know, like work for a living, engage in capitalism.
Every puss is working for the weekend.
Is this the... God. Wait, so this is the Buzz Dixon theory of crafting or ethnic villains, is the fact that if you're going to have like a villain of a certain ethnicity, you have to make sure there is also a hero in the same property of that ethnicity to make sure that people don't mistake you for saying this group of people is bad when you have an example of one being good. Is that what octopus are doing in this Little Mermaid episode?
I don't know how heroic a masseuse is, but
oh, sure. Let me tell you. Anybody who's willing to give me a massage is a goddamn hero in my book.
Man, octopuses are the drizzling shits. Come over here and give me a back rub. That's not how that works, Ray.
What are you talking about? What is happening? Also, I would never let an octopus touch me. That is horrifying. No,
yeah, that'd be real weird.
Not even a massage. Not even a good one. I would not accept from an octopus. Sorry. Sorry, sir or madam. I don't actually know how octopus genitalia work. Probably for the best. I don't. You know what? Unlike the American right wing, I don't spend my time worrying about the genitals of others.
That's good, I guess. Like in this context, it's the context that concerns me. But like, yeah, we can move on. It's not important.
Okay, great. I would really like to. Okay, so this is where we're at. They're stuck in the cave, and Urchin is Flounder and Ariel stuck in the cave. It's a very deep cave, but the guy, the octopus, has got very long tentacles. Again, terrifying. And he's reaching out trying to grab at him, which is just like, oh, this is making me upset. And the urchin boy runs off and he says, I got to find King Triton. Goes to King Triton's throne room. King Triton, after a long day of signing paperwork, signing scrolls. Ah, I am so exhausted. That's enough kinging for one day.
He goes to the spa. Emotional labor. It's not just that his hand's cramping up. Like he's got menstrual duties to take care of. He's deciding who gets what bailiwick and who's, you know, these aren't elected positions that are under him. He's got to do all the doling out of all this stuff.
Flounder probably like summarizes each one, but yeah, I agree. I mean, he's got to do more because he knows that the next day is his like only day off. There's probably a whole bunch of sea people that are like trying to get different bills passed for their little sections of the ocean.
Don't you remember I'm just a bill, Ray? Now imagine that each one of those scrolls is a little talking scroll who tells him what he does and who made him and all of the things that he's, you know, going to affect. Like that's a grind, man.
I don't know. I don't get the vibe that he read a single thing. That's all. And also it's weird that you say that because it just occurred to me that Sebastian is like the choir leader. He writes music, but he's also involved deeply in the political scene. I that's a little weird.
Oh, they respect the arts there, huh? I can see why you'd be confused because it's not like you have seen that anywhere in our country.
Oh, yeah, I guess never mind. I've seen Kid Rock in the Oval Office. You know what? You're right. Urchin runs over to get the king. He's not there because he's at the spa. Getting a massage from an octopus. Also, you know,
speaking of like phoning it in, this is the voice of the original Sebastian. So it's not like he sounds like a shitty knockoff. It's the real guy.
Your Majesty, you've been kinging too hard. You could use a nice relaxing dip in the hot spring.
Excellent. That just sounds like, oh, Jesus Christ. Ooh,
he does just sound, he sounds tired. He sounds like, he probably like signed a season long contract and then like had gotten some other work and was like, crap, how do I do this voice again? Ugh, I'm so tired of this.
I don't even know. This is like four years after The Little Mermaid would have been made. And he's probably worked constantly with this character and he is just ready to move on at this point. But the checks are good.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I never will understand how the David Carusos of the world leave the one thing that they finally like nailed. Right. I just like you've been doing good. You finally land on the thing that sort of has put you on the map. And then after like two seasons, they're just like, I'm going to go do something else now. Why? Oh my God, you have plenty of time to be an actor. Like, I'm just trying to imagine, like, what if Chris Evans, after like Winter Soldier, was like, I've had enough Captain America. Like, no one would be happy and he would be done. Like, I don't know. That's crazy to me. Somebody does that, I don't understand.
Back when I was doing entertainment journalism, I had to go to a few of those sets for those long running shows, you know, the ones that are like in their 15th season. And they're still just cranking out the same procedural bullshit. And like the people that stick around, those are the people that I really respected. Cause like all of them, like they had other shit going on. They're like, okay, I'm here and I'm busting my ass for, you know, like 4 or 5 days a week working like, you know, 12, 14, 16 hour days. And then we're done on hiatus. I'm going to go fucking do some theater shit. And like just go and do stuff at like little black box theaters. Like these people like love what they do. They love art and, you know, all of that. And honestly, it's kind of sad. Like the strikes that are happening are a reminder that like a lot of there used to be a time where you could just work and now you kind of can't.
Yeah. No, I get it. Like I work in the world of video games, a little bit different than this industry, but only halfway different, really. You know, it's still production. And I had a one-on-one with my manager, and he was saying to me, he says, you know, I'm asking this question of everybody. Do you, you know, like what you're doing? Do you want to keep doing it? And I'm just like, sir, I would do this till the end of time. What are you talking about? This is the best thing in the world. And I'm so happy to be here. I'm never going to get bored. Like I can't get bored physically. I can't get bored at work because I have 5,000 podcasts and a bunch of other stuff I'm doing. So it's like, this is awesome. No, keep me here forever, please. You know, I don't know. That's just me. Gina, any extra thoughts here?
Nope.
Okay.
G.I. Joe will return after these messages.
From Disney's The Little Mermaid.
Listen close, I've a secret to tell.
How to make a princess out of Ariel. Princess Mermaid Ariel.
In her fin is a sparkly surprise.
Her fin changed to a gown.
She's a princess before your eyes.
She's gorgeous.
Hair so lovely, a crown so bright.
It's time to dance away
into the night.
Princess Mermaid Ariel.
Eric Dahl from Gift Set sold separately.
Now, back to G.I. Joe.
So, Urchin here steals the trident. Now, this is a bad move.
I think he thinks he's, like, borrowing it for the greater good. But just...
He does say
like,
that, yeah.
I guess I kind of get, like, at least he tried to find King Triton. At least, like, that's sort of better than I think other cartoons would do at this time.
Yeah.
Like it wasn't just like he like went in and he was like, I'm going to save her on my own. Like, I feel like an 80s cartoon would be like,
oh, yeah,
would be like, oh, I'm going to take it. Like, he just got up to go to the bathroom. I'm going to take it. But at least in this, he's like, hey, like King Triton, I need your help. Oh, crap. Like Sebastian? No. And so then he's like, what do I do? And in his mind, he's probably thinking like, damn, she's probably dead. Like, if I wait another minute, she's dead. And this is kind of a very little kid way of thinking. I mean, I remember like this is I was 5 years old or 4 or 5. I was in kindergarten and I like went to use the restroom right before everyone went to lunch and like came out and like the classroom was dark and like everyone was at lunch, which by the way, the lunchroom was like, it was a small school. The lunchroom was like 10 feet down the hallway. And I like had no idea like what to do. I don't know if I thought I was going to get in trouble. I heard a teacher coming and like hid in a cubby. Like I was just, and then like at some point everyone came back and I like realized I was like, shit. I guess I gotta pop out. So I like sort of came out and the teacher was like, Gina, where were you? And I was like, I came out of the bathroom and no one was here. And she was like, why didn't you just walk to the lunchroom? And I was like, oh. Like, so I get that this, you know, 8-year-old urchin kid is like, all right, well, my one plan was to get the king. The backup plan was to get the crab man who serves the king. That's shot to hell. Oh, look, there's a trident. I guess I can save them on my own. Like,
I couldn't have gone to one of the hundreds of security guards whose job it is to keep the princess safe and who are just wandering the halls of this place.
I mean, it's been well established that security is very lax in every Little Mermaid iteration.
Yeah, he doesn't even have Secret Service for his own kids. Remember, Ariel gets like pulled aside by Ursula in the movie. There's no like Secret Service.
Where she shouldn't have been, to be fair. Like she went to places that she shouldn't have gone. Gina
victim blaming right off the bat.
She went seeking trouble.
Oh yeah. Oh no. You know, if those people hadn't just gone there to do those things, they wouldn't have gotten in trouble.
Part of the problem I have with this is that he doesn't have like this real strong impulse to do something bad. Like it's not that I need a lesson, but I do need like a really strong arc story or character arc here. And he's just sort of like doing a thing, you know, that it's just like, he doesn't make a real good choice, but he's, you know, doing what he has to in the moment because, you know, he's pressed. It's not like he was just wandering around like, oh, I guess I'll just grab this trident. Like, this is important stuff. And so he grabs it. And at this point, I was like, so wait a minute. Is this a metaphor for, like, gun safety?
Yes, it is.
Yeah, it's very clear at the end that that's what it is.
Yeah, but at this point, it's just sort of weirdly, you know, like what's happening and like what's the point of this going to be?
I mean, when King Triton went on his spa day, I found it odd that he just left his trident, because like it's established in the movie that that's like, you know, that it's super, super, super powerful. It's what Ursula wants the whole time, basically. And he just like leaves it by his throne. Like, why not just take it with you? It didn't seem. And then at the end, when they really do make a like, oh, tridents, if you leave your trident out, it could go off in someone's face and shoot them. Gun safety. When they make their whole thing, I was just like, oh God, that's what this was.
Yeah. They don't hit you with it until the very end. But yes, we all came to the same conclusion. So it's obvious. Look, when I got it, that's how you know it was too heavy handed.
I mean, it definitely feels like Disney gave a note that was like, can we tie a real world lesson into this? And then they sort of put it in there. Like they just sort of shoved a lesson in there. It did not feel like when they were breaking this episode, they were like, okay, how do we get a gun safety episode in here? It feels like they were like, okay, it's Father's Day. Ariel gets in trouble. This kid goes to try and save her, makes things worse. And then a Disney exec was like, you know what would be great is if every episode had some sort of lesson. This one can be gun control.
I kind of wonder, though, if it wasn't that they were tasked with making a gun control episode and they're like, but we got to like be chill about it. We can't like slam people over the head. Or someone thought that a gun control episode would be a good idea, but he didn't, he or she didn't want to hit it on the nail too hard and like maybe kind of like slide it, you know, under the radar. And so it just comes off as just kind of like, oh, I guess that's a metaphor, but it's not great.
The thing that super annoyed me was the fact that this kid doesn't know how to use the trident, can barely hold the trident because it's so heavy, and yet seems to think that he can lug it all the way to where Ariel's being menaced and then make this gigantic octopus go away. Like he doesn't know how to use it. Like it's nothing to him.
He actually does know how to use it because he saw King Triton say trident fire.
Oh, okay.
So like he knows that that's how to make it go.
All right. Well, you know what? That's fair enough. He at least thinks he knows how to use it. That is at least plausible enough for me. That's fair. Cause they were doing the skeet shooting earlier. Okay. Yeah. I take it all back. Gina, you nailed me. Play the music, Chan.
You got Nickelodeon.
Ugh,
I don't
Nickelodeon.
No, that was it.
Superior.
That's why I was never on a musical improv team. I don't really have.
Create the drop right now. Every time Gina gets me, we play it again. God, you guys are going to be so tired of that. Maybe we shouldn't do that. Anyway, we cut back to the cave, and now the octopus is trying to smash all of the support pillars of the cave to create a cave-in, and I'm like, I guess, you know, that's fine, but it doesn't even work, stupid octopus. Maybe they're not that smart. Ariel just starts picking up and using the same animation roughly 17 times, throws a rock at the octopus and biffs him in the snoot.
No, he biffs the tentacle, which then pulls the
tentacle
back and then goes back in, and the very same rock, the very same tentacle gets bopped back again. And I was like, oh, okay, I guess we are cutting corners here and there.
He-Man Cartoons thinks you reuse too much animation here. Let me just put it out there.
This is no Gummy Bears. We'll say that much.
Oh my gosh, that was insane. And they just kept doing it. That's what got me. It's like after like the third time, I'm like, okay. And then there were like six more times.
And then just a little bit after this, there's this electrocution animation that was also repeated.
Oh yeah. Look,
the episode like, clearly came in short.
Yeah. Yeah. No, like the beats sort of made sense. Like
they did.
If you had, yeah, you've got like, okay, we need like 45 seconds for this scene of peril where the octopus is trying to grab him, and you're like, yeah, we don't have money for
don't worry about that, we're Disney, we don't have money. Yeah. Oh wait, that's actually true in the year 2023. Anyway, the eel is now there. Sales fish is there to help with the, like, we all know what's gonna happen here, come on. I don't even know what the eel's thinking, quite honestly. You know you can't trust the evil manta, for God's sakes. But he ends up using a net, stealing the trident from Urchin, who's a real idiot. He's really stupid.
I thought this was going to be a Magic Beans kind of situation. And then, yeah, he just like straight up steals it from him. I'm like, oh, okay, I guess that's not what we're going to do. It feels like we could have gone different ways to make it a little more interesting or engaging or something.
Yeah, I mean, this is sort of the story of Disney TV shows. This is why I was a Nickelodeon kid. Nickelodeon usually made the weird choices. Disney always made the sort of uninteresting, safe choices.
Yeah. Which, I mean, if you're a parent, like, you probably want the kids.
It's fine.
Hell no. You want your kid making the weird choices.
Okay, also true. I want my kid making all the weird choices. Seriously. You're right. I mean, that's a fact.
After all of the goddamn unboxing, gaming, YouTubes that my kid watches right now, I would be deliriously happy to have watched this piece of shit Little Mermaid cartoon.
I mean, you should try showing him an old Nickelodeon cartoon. They're weird. You might like them.
He's not into the Muppet Show, which already tells me this kid is...
Chan, this is not good news.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chan, you want to know a secret? Mine isn't into the Muppet Show either.
What is it about kids today?
I don't know. Well, yeah, this is the thing I'll be a cranky conservative about. Well, those meddling kids. Oh, it's so upsetting.
For a while, he was into some Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay.
Some of these later versions are actually really good.
The new trailer looks amazing. I wrote a breakdown of it for Tommy Bechtold for
like that. The new movie looks fucking dope as hell.
Yeah, y'all, we broke the trailer down, and there's a lot of cool details.
I was surprised though, like I said, like because I was never a huge fan of the OG cartoon series. It was okay, but because I had started on the original Eastman and Laird comics, I was like, "Yeah, this is some like kiddie bullshit." So I wasn't expecting much, but I want to say it's the 2012 and the 2017 series are surprisingly strong. And like, I watched them, I'm like, this is pretty good stuff.
Mm-hmm. I was a big fan of the cartoon of Ninja Turtles. And then I got into the Eastman and Laird comics. And then I had a conversation on my school bus with somebody who pointed out several moments that were just total bullshit in the cartoon show. And I went, you're right. This isn't very good. Now, the show that I got to talk about this, I got to derail everything for a minute because my 5-year-old is watching a show, and it's on Max, as we call it, formerly HBO Max. And it's a show I did not know existed. It's a show that I wish if we ever do My Three Dads again, we got to do an episode of it. Did you know that there is a Sesame Street based show that is animated that has Cookie Monster, Abby, and Elmo as robots who can grow like Giant Man / Ant Man and who solve very mundane problems, and they're all fucking robots.
Yeah, that is
Mecha Builders. It's the craziest thing I've ever seen, and I've seen it a lot over the last week.
I don't know how that got into the executive suites, and how the executives were convinced that this was a good idea. Honestly, I've only seen it from afar very few times.
I watched three episodes today, as a matter of fact.
It just seems bug nutty insane.
It's absolutely insane. And anybody's got kids at home, just here you go. Red meat, watch it. We will be, again, if we ever come back and do more My Three Dads, if I need a ninth podcast to do again, we're doing it because I have to mention it somewhere or I will explode. The fact that this exists is absolute insanity to me. Sorry for derailing, derailment over.
Hey, Gina, why don't you call a Big Bird and see if you can get on that line, Steph?
Okay. I need his unlisted number. He's notoriously private.
That's a fact.
I mean, you just drive by his Malibu place.
It's variegated.
Yeah.
I think he lives across the street from like a Kardashian, right? Isn't that?
That seems about right. Yeah. I don't remember which one.
It doesn't matter.
Khloe? Candiria?
Candace? Is Candace a Kardashian?
Koopa Chabra?
That's definitely a Kardashian. I remember that one. So the urchin shows up at the cave anyway, empty-handed, as he gets himself out of the net because he finds a jagged clam to cut the net, which was wild. And he saves the day by going to the top of the entrance to the cave and finding a giant rock and dropping it like almost on the octopus's head, who then runs away. And in my head, I'm like, that's a bad plan. You're going to cover the entrance.
I thought the same thing.
Like, what are you doing?
Wasn't a problem. What are you going to do?
Didn't matter. Did not matter. Gets everybody out. Here we go. But now we have a secondary problem. Ariel gets the glow shell as well. Very important. She does manage to wrangle one here. But now the evil Manta has the trident, and the eel is like an idiot. Like at this point, I don't even know, dude. Like, this, what are you doing? Sell at the market. I don't know. But like, you'll get arrested and murdered. Don't do that. But he takes it to the evil Manta, who takes it immediately from him and is like, this will help me rule the sea. And then he doesn't even pay him. Like, this is real Trump stuff here.
Yeah.
Not paying his contractors, you know, just skeevy garbage. Didn't make me happy. I'll let you leave with your life. That's payment enough. It's like, man. Trying to make a living out
Listen,
here.
This eel should have known better.
Now this eel has to try to like rob the house of Macaulay Culkin at like Christmas time, you know, to make ends meet. Because he's Joe Pesci.
Yeah. No,
I got that. If you explain the joke, it makes it 10 times better.
Yes. Yes, it does.
Amazingly, the eel does know where the evil manta ray is and is ready to sell our heroes a map. I like the bit. I like this bit. I like this character. He annoyed me a few times, but I really liked this. And then finding out it was Dave Coulier after the fact makes me like him 10 times more. But he says, I'll sell you a map on how to get to the evil man. Why he has this map is outrageous. I don't know.
I mean, I think he probably just has, he's an entrepreneurial eel who is like, you know what? It's like, why do any of the people have maps to the stars homes? Someone might want to go there and you can make some money. If this eel can make money on it, he's going to think ahead.
I mean, the guy's name is the Evil Manta. Surely someone would want to map to his home.
Yeah.
Someone would want to go there and get eaten by his dogfish.
Mm-hmm.
You know what? I love the fact that he's got like this basket full of just this garbage, these terrible shells, just absolute trash. And the only thing he manages to sell are his maps. I think you should lean into that a little bit harder.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he's trying to diversify.
I know, but it's not working.
Dries up. You don't want to be stuck holding these things.
Now, you don't want to be caught holding the map.
You know what? That's not the worst Tim Curry laugh I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Even Tim Curry phoning it in is better than 99% of the rest of us. So
true that.
I mean, just keep it real. Now, they got to get around the dogfish. And they figure out the only thing a dogfish loves is a blowfish ball. Yeah. A living creature.
Mm-hmm.
That they inflate,
yeah,
and use as a beach ball, mm-hmm, for the ravenous, monstrous dog.
They do take great care to make sure that the dog never gets to the fish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So, like, yeah, I don't know.
Awfully cavalier with the life of another is all I'm trying to say.
Yeah, I mean, the fish seems pretty happy about it. So I was thinking that if we did see it in its mouth, it would just be like gumming it, kind of.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, hot. And also the dog's name is Smiley.
Mm-hmm.
Smiley the dogfish. I don't know. That made me laugh. I liked it. I wrote it down. How does the trident allow evil Manta to rule? Doesn't really seem like he does a whole lot with it.
It's because later on, King Triton essentially says, like, only I can use it as it's meant to be used.
Yeah. So this plan was never going to work. So where's the drama?
I mean, he basically got a free gun. Guy said, hey, you want to buy this gun? He's like, how about I not shoot you with it? And you walk away. He's like, all right. And he's got a gun, and he's going to rule the seven seas with this gun.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Which is also what Ursula does too.
Like she appears to know how to.
Yeah,
unlock
because she has
things.
Her own powers because she is a witch.
Yeah.
But she becomes much more powerful when she gets the trident. But yeah, I think this dude thinks. I mean, he does get more powerful with it, so, or maybe doesn't he fire it at some point?
Well, I believe that the sales eel gets zapped with it a whole bunch of times on the way over. Yeah. I don't remember him shooting. He might have shot it. You know what? It didn't leave an impression on me if he did.
But also, like, the king says, like, yeah, like, anybody can, like, shoot electricity out of it. So I think that's all he did.
But that's the thing is, I guess it's like delusional. He says, I have the Triton, the trident. Blah, I now will be ruler of the seas. To me, that's like some methed out 18-year-old in a red state saying, now that I finally got me a Derringer Colt 45 pistol, I'm a rule this country. Like, no, you're not. Like, it's just not going to work out that way. Like, I know you feel powerful, but you're overestimating your own abilities and your potential in all of these things. I don't see how that would work. Because King Triton rules with, like, respect. You don't hear a lot of grumbling about his rule, right? I mean, maybe that's because we're not shown it as the viewer. But
I definitely think there is a movie or a cartoon or something to be made, like, from the perspective of his subjects. And I bet he's a pretty shit king, honestly.
God dang it. Why can't we know an animator and make this happen, Robert Clark Chan? If only we knew a TV writer and an animator. Oh, wait.
Nah.
It's too bad it's never going to work out. Because that's a funny bit. Because, yeah, on the surface, nobody seems mad at him, right? He seems like he's doing as good a job, like a King Solomon-esque way of doing things. It's not like he's holding down the masses near as we can tell. I don't know. Like, it allows the Trident staff allows him to put down any 1v1 challengers to his rule, but it's not like he has this to subjugate an entire ocean.
No, you know? The Trident does more than that.
What else does it do?
I mean, like, it can, like, help things grow. It can, like, he waves it over the land in The Little Mermaid at some point, and things sort of spring to life. So it's not just, like, he uses it for a number of things. I think he uses it to control the tides.
Interesting. Got to rethink everything.
All right. You know what? Maybe what we missed of his... you know, kingly duties was doing all that tide moving.
The Trident is a magical weapon that is featured in The Little Mermaid. It serves as the personal weapon of King Triton. It has vast magical abilities capable of controlling the sea and its spoils.
It spoils controlling that it's taking it out of him.
And thus has been strongly desired by malevolent forces. It controls the sea.
How much can they use it, though? Because King Triton does make the point that, like, I'm the only one that can really use this to its potential.
Yeah, they only use its, like, weapon capabilities. I don't think that they could, like, grow sea grass or anything with it like he can.
Yeah, but, like, we have farmers. We don't put them in charge. I don't know.
It's.
You know what? He's made of magic and rainbows, and he should rule. And you know what? Why don't we have a monarchy in the United States? I'll say it. Why don't we just get ruled by a ruling family? Fast forward to 10 years when you're listening to this episode in the vault. Oh, no. Oh, no. What happened?
Powers, energy bolts, megathoskinesis, where it can increase or decrease the size of the user or something you're pointing at.
Sounds like he was getting ready for an episode of Who Would Win.
Oh, the Trident can conjure things, can create a rainbow, shape-shifting, can transform its user or other merpeople into humans and vice versa. Yeah.
God, that's damn right. Power.
Yeah, power. It's under conjuring. Levitation, it can levitate merpeople. That's right, he does. Yeah,
in the water.
And also, this is what he he levitates people out of the water in the movie. But also, he uses it to turn Ariel into a human. Can manipulate the bodies of other merpeople or aquatic creatures, forcing them to do the user's bidding against their free will. Immobilization, it can incapacitate aquatic creatures, merpeople. It can create
Chan, DC Comics, Aquaman, Gina, King Triton from The Little Mermaid. Who would win?
Can create different aspects of the weather, such as rainstorms, thunderstorms, etc. It can create ice, manipulate ice. It can shape water at will. Ice
being a bigger level mutant right there.
Yeah.
Oh, boy. Don't you, Chan? This is getting too crossovery now.
It can also
be very uncomfortable.
It can also be wielded in combat just like any other melee weapon.
It can also stab people.
Yeah, that's D8 damage right there.
Gina, thank you for that. I actually do feel more enriched for now knowing all those things. God dang it. Yes, King Triton will probably be appearing on an episode of Who Would Win now because you did that.
Because I've been fucking pushing that dude for months now.
Have you? I don't remember you ever pushing him.
Jesus Christ.
It's not loud enough. Are you going to be in a room with me, Robert Clark Chan, and not and somehow not be the loudest one?
Good to know I'm not the only one Ray ignores. He just ignores everybody.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anyways, a really wild thing here happens where they put the glow shell down. So that way the evil Black Manta will put the spear, the trident down, and then pick up the glow. And then it's like, put it down, pick it up, put it down, pick it up. And then he does. And then they run off with the trident. And, you know, then he like grabs Flounder or something. I don't know. This is supposed to be like the high point of the drama. And I kind of checked out at this moment. I was like, just get to the point where you don't, you have it. And he
you don't care about Flounder, whether he lives or dies.
I'll be honest. Flounder, I found a little bit annoying. I find Flounder annoying.
Yeah. The whole, you know, like you expect this to be something like, okay, well, how do we outwit this, you know, powerful guy? And their plan is to wait for him to put it down.
Yeah.
He does, I guess. And they grab it. He chases them. And then they shoot him. They fucking shoot him because this is a gun metaphor.
Oh, that's right. And they did, huh?
It's real weird.
They blast him. Yeah, okay. Oh, yeah, I do have it written here. They zap him real good. Oh, dang. Yeah. That's a thing that happens. So they go back to the castle because Flounder, he was holding Flounder when he gets shot. And Flounder took some shrapnel. Let's just keep it real. He's electrified and so he's like not moving.
You shoot the intruder into your house, but you also accidentally clip your son, and like now he's in the hospital to continue this sort of weirdly amorphous gun thing. No,
that's a thing that Fox News viewers keep doing. You see it in the news every month or so. Of, you know, late night Fox News, you know, 60 plus boomer with a gun fetish who is, you know, wants to shoot one of those people very, very badly. Like his like college age or, you know, 20 something year old son or daughter comes home late at night, lets themselves in with their key, is in the kitchen making a sandwich, and they run downstairs and shoot him. Like that, you see that story all the time right now. And if those boomers had been watching the Little Mermaid cartoon of 1992, maybe they would have learned the lesson before it was too late. It's frankly upsetting how often that happens, honestly. Somebody should do something, right?
No.
Probably?
No.
I don't know. Pumping people full of guns and stoking them with fear of the other and then letting them get all drunk? Just seems like, you know, I'll play devil's advocate. Sounds like a recipe for something bad to happen.
I think it's manageable. I think we can hold out until we die.
From one of these people.
Well, I mean,
regrettably. Anyway, back at the castle, King Triton gets his groove back, uses the spear. I guess saves Flounder right away. He's just like, well, let's just take this bullet hole away.
Yeah. That's a thing that a gun can do.
You know, the way guns famously remove bullets. Although, to be fair, I have seen Tenet, so checkmate. Dang.
Oh.
And then we get the speech that all three of us keyed into.
You're telling me that you understood Tenet, but you still don't understand Legion.
Can I tell you right now, I do understand Tenet. I watched the first half of it, and then my wife fell asleep. So then we went back and I just watched the whole movie again because she fell asleep pretty early on. So I watched it 1.5 times and, you know, we got about an hour and a half into it. And I was like, I absolutely understand this movie. Why is this the thing I actually click with and understand? And so many things that are not as complicated as this escape me. But yeah, I'm going to say right now, and this is not a bravado. It's just I absolutely understood Tenet. Don't ask me to explain it, but I know I understand it. Yeah. Oh, this is the speech we all keyed up on, though. Oh, I shouldn't have left this like not locked up. It's a very dangerous weapon. Something really bad could have happened.
Something is horrible should never be left unattended. I promise to be more careful from now on.
We must all be more careful from now on.
Did he look right at the camera when he said that? Because it feels like that's what happened.
Odd.
So heavy-handed because, and again, all three of us immediately were like, okay.
And I mean, honestly, in 1988 or 92 or whenever this was made, the
92
gun control argument was in a very different place.
It was.
And it just reads weird today.
The assault weapons ban was still in effect, and we didn't have the mass shootings on the scale that we have. Like, that's just not a thing that happened.
I mean, here's the thing. The Little Mermaid went off the air, and we started having mass shootings. Mm-hmm, so I think the only conclusion that can be drawn is that we need to bring back Little Mermaid to save America.
Mm. Seems obvious.
Sounds like your political
do the stance. Math.
Do the math. Yeah, I mean, look, it's a real coincidence. That was it, 96? The assault weapons ban expired, was allowed to expire, and then immediately afterwards, mass shootings became an everyday occurrence in the country.
Well, no.
I'm sure it's coincidence.
The first big one happened in 1999, so.
Was that Columbine?
Yeah.
Yeah. So it took them a couple of years, but they haven't stopped, just for the record. They did stop, actually, for 2 years when a million Americans were dying in a quarantined pandemic. That was kind of nice, honestly.
God for COVID.
Yeah. Honestly, I look back at that, and I'm just like, you know, at least the mass shooting stopped for a while. Probably not the best attitude to have. And then, yeah, that's how I knew COVID was over, when the mass shooting started up again. That is a very depressing thing I just said, but a true
nature
statement.
Nature is healing.
Yeah. Oh, God. Yeah. That's so upsetting. Oh, I'm so mad right now. I'm so mad and I'm laughing. That's comedy. Okay, this puts us at the end. We're giving away our gifts now. And they give him... I love the bit where the one daughter's like, I gave him crown polish last year. I'm going to give him crown polish this year. And so she gives it to King Triton. And he's like, this is so thoughtful. Thank you so much. Turns around to a curio cabinet, opens it up, and there are 9,000 bottles of this crown polish in there. Yeah. And he just puts it next to them and closes it and turns back around again. I did howl with delight when I saw that. I loved that bit.
Dude should polish his crown every now and then.
Yeah, why aren't you polishing your crown?
Oh, I bet he's polishing his crown.
Oh, boy.
I think it's octopus for that.
Oh, boy. He gets gifted the glowing shell. It's, of course, the best gift he's ever going to get. It's wonderful. He gets gifted the squid ink pen by Urchin, lest we forget this kid still exists, because the whole thing here is he wasn't going to give King Triton a gift because he doesn't have a father, because he's an orphan, okay? And Ariel convinces him, you're like a son to him. He's like a father. I think she actually said he's like a father to you, which kind of is hilarious because it's a one-way street in that regard. And I'm hoping that I'm remembering that right, because that's kind of wild. So she gets him the pen, and he's just like, I've always considered you a little bit of a son. So thank you for this. Yes.
Hold on.
You want to try to get the poll?
You know what he says when Urchin, like, spends his hard-earned cash? I don't know where he gets it from.
He's
but,
picking
you know, like,
pockets all day.
He tries to, yeah, like urchins do. He tries to do a thing for this person he considers, you know, like a father figure, and he's really putting himself out there. You know, this urchin obviously is, you know, really defensive and closed off because, you know, he's lived kind of a hard life.
Yeah. It's
and the king says to him,
thank you, urchin. Though I'm not really your father.
Dude.
Ooh,
no,
yeah, that's right.
It's a fake out. It's a fake out.
That's right.
Do you really need to?
Didn't need to say that,
that
dude.
Shit in?
It's a did fake
not need
out.
To say that.
And then the kid is delighted at the second half of the sentence. That's all that matters. That kid's gonna grow up to be a serial killer anyway.
I consider you part of the family.
Part of the family, not his son.
No,
that would be,
could be like a fifth
that would
cousin.
Be insane. That would be insane if he was like, I still consider you my son. That would be insane and weird.
But that's what Ariel convinced him of.
Yeah, she was saying, like, he's the closest thing you have to a dad, so get him a fucking gift, you little goober.
Hey,
consider you part of the family, like a dog.
Yes. No, a dog is something people want.
Oh, God dang.
Wow.
Wow. All right, I'll adopt him. I'll adopt him. Urchin, get over here.
You were the one who was annoyed by him the most.
Oh, I hate him so much, but maybe I can change him.
He'll kill you in your sleep.
Maybe he can come to my house and learn to be less annoying.
No, he'll kill you in your sleep one night.
That's probably fine. Anyway, sorry, Chan, you had a point to make.
No, I really didn't. It's just...
I knew we were so excited for this point. No, I want to hear it, Chan.
No, I just... It's just a horrible thing to say. Like, would you tell your daughter, like, look...
No!
I know that, like, biologically...
Oh, my God. I'm not really your
father. But I really consider you my daughter.
I consider you part of the family is so much worse.
He's got other daughters to focus on. This little brat wants all his time. He doesn't know what he's doing. I'm telling you, I think his parents swam away from him.
Given my legitimate family situation, when he dropped that out there, my mouth just dropped open. Fuck off all the way. What are you, Marjorie Taylor Greene up in this shit? What is happening right now?
Shit. He doesn't know that kid shit.
He doesn't know that kid shit, but he was given a gift.
Oh, boy.
Say something nice.
He did.
That wasn't nice. He immediately reminded him of his place. That's some Logan Roy secession shit right there. That's not cool, man.
I think Gina may be taking the wrong lessons from Succession.
Oh, maybe.
These are good people. They're doing well, right?
Make that fucking merkid do bore on the floor.
Oh my God. Okay, look, I'm not caught up all the way yet. I'm halfway through season 4.
What?
So nobody spoil anything. Gina, I started season 1 like 2.5 weeks ago.
We'll get to it.
I'm blazing through it as fast as I can.
So long.
Because I'm doing 9,000 podcasts and a job. And a baby.
I'm halfway through starting Succession, so okay. I feel like I can catch up maybe.
Yeah,
but
you're not warning people not to give you spoilers.
Because I'm going to have it watched in a week, so I don't have much longer to go. It's not like I'm mid-season 1 saying, don't tell me anything. I've got 7 more eps to go. I can do that in like 3 TV sessions.
No,
so.
you don't get to be behind on watching shit and then care about spoilers.
I do with the two of you. When I ask you politely, just if you know things, don't tell me.
Now, you were mad at people online the other day, too, for spoiling things. And that's like, if you care about it, then don't go online.
No, I'll tell you, I was mad about something because here's the thing. The thing that really makes me mad is when people on the East Coast watch it, spoil it on Twitter before the people on the West Coast even have the opportunity to watch it.
That's not how time
works. Can't you keep
it
in your pants for like 3 hours?
No, you were talking about Ted Lasso, which had already aired. I had already watched it when you were complaining about it.
Yeah, but Gina, you've already seen the Flash movie, and it doesn't come out at the time for like 2 weeks.
I did not watch that Ted Lasso early. I wouldn't spoil something that I had seen in a screening, but you were complaining about, you were like, oh, people on Twitter are spoiling Ted Lasso. And it's like, yeah, it's because it's the fucking finale, and it had aired an hour ago.
An hour ago? You can't keep it in your pants
for
24
offline.
Hours? What are you talking about?
Then stay offline if you care that much.
That's outrageous. No, look, I did mute every succession term and every character's name on Twitter to absolutely prevent that from happening. So
why
I'm
don't
doing
you just
my part.
Not go on Twitter?
How am I supposed to? I am terminally online, Gina. How am I not going to be on Twitter? It's a problem. Why not just tell the alcoholic, don't drink?
That's what they do.
That's actually pretty good advice. Anyway, he uses the goddamn squid pen and then it blows up in his face for like the 900th time this episode, and then they all get a hearty chuckle and the show ends.
Yes,
he uses some mermaid. Squid ink to torture Sebastian.
Yeah.
It's a real anti-cephalopod message in this episode.
Crabs are not cephalopods.
Wasn't it a squid and an octopus? Everyone's getting it here.
What? No? I don't.
I don't know. If it turns out I'm right about cephalopods, you'll never hear the end of it.
The bad guy's a manta ray.
That's not a cephalopod.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
But honestly, in this episode, I'll argue that the giant octopus, bigger villain than the evil manta ray.
Yes. Yeah. Well, in terms of effectiveness, definitely.
Yeah.
Bad manta doesn't do shit. And I don't even understand why he's there.
He threatens to squish Flounder to death.
Yeah. And he doesn't. Like, the dude is enormous. He could have just popped that goddamn fish's head like a pimple, and he just, like, squished.
Yeah, but then he would have no more leverage. He's got to hold on to him for the leverage.
Oh! The
leverage?
Cephalopod is a member of the molluscan class, such as squid, octopus, cuttlefish, or nautilus. So I did not do a bad job with that.
No, I said crabs. I said crabs.
Yeah, because we were talking about Sebastian.
But I was talking about squids and octopus, so...
Why?
And what Sebastian do? Did he even do anything in this episode?
I literally had just said he uses the squid ink to torture Sebastian.
Yes, yeah, okay, yeah. But I wasn't saying Sebastian came off bad. I was saying that the squid himself, who poofs him, comes off bad. Am I crazy? I don't know what's happening anymore. Yes. No, wait, so why do we hate Sebastian? Is this another Ted Lasso situation? I don't know why I'm supposed to hate Sebastian. I'm sorry, Gina.
Can we go?
We should go.
So go to patreon.com/knowingishalfthepodcast or facebook.com/knowingishalfthepodcast or check us out on Twitter at G.I. Joe Podcast. Thanks for listening, everybody. I'm also on there individually at Almighty Ray.
Yes, you are.
I'm on AE Doubleback at.
That does sound like him.
Why is Marvin the Martian kidding?
It sounded accurate. I'm at Gina Ippy.
If you haven't gone to at 999 RPMs for the parody Robert Clark Chan account, you are missing out.
Are you? I don't think there's anything there.
The joke is it's shut down.
You got Nickelodeon.
Hi, I'm Kevin Goatee.
Hey, I'm Kevin Israel.
We host Gutting the Sacred Cow, the best and most unique movie debate podcast out there. Why?
Because we invite our guests to pick a film that they find overrated or hate and try to convince us to see their argument.
They must pick a film that is a financial success, widely beloved, or critically acclaimed.
That's right. Some of the films our guests have tried to eviscerate, Raiders of the Lost Ark, Pulp Fiction, Ghostbusters? You can find us on all podcast platforms like Apple, Google, Spotify, and more. And if you want to watch our smiling faces, we're also on YouTube.
GuttingTheSacredCow.com is where you find all of our information. And we look forward to our guests infuriating you when they attack your favorite films.